Coming up on today's episode, we're going to talk Adam Scott's victory at Riviera, Tiger's disappointing run as tournament host, and what lies ahead for the year's first WGC event. Welcome to the Golf Central Podcast, presented by TaylorMade and the all-new Sim Driver. The driver head was in need of a drastic change in order to provide more performance, so TaylorMade changed the shape altogether with their new Sim Driver, which allowed them to make it fast and forgiving where every golfer needs it, the downswing. The pros love the new shape, but the biggest reason TaylorMade changed the shape was to help make you into a better golfer, so check out TaylorMadeGolf.com for more information on the all-new Sim family. And with that, I'm Will Gray, happy to be joined, fresh off a red-eye, by Ryan Lavner, who was out at the Genesis Invitational all last week covering it for GolfChannel.com. Lav, thanks for hopping in and sharing your thoughts.
Happy to be here. It was a great week in LA. First time covering the Genesis Invitational. I wasn't there before Tiger got involved, but boy, that is a well-run tournament. Obviously, the golf course is iconic. The field was as good as it possibly gets. It's basically a WGC event, if you see the number of world ranking points that are on offer this week. So a very good week. No complaints. And we had a great winner and a great tournament.
You can almost make an argument that this is it was a better field at Riviera than the one that they've got this week at Chapultepec. We'll touch on that in a minute. But what was your biggest takeaway from Sunday? It was, as you said, a loaded field, a star-studded leaderboard. You had three big names tied at the top entering the day. And then it's Adam Scott who finally breaks through after a number of close calls at this course and in general on the PGA Tour. It's his first win on the PGA Tour since 2016. Granted, he did win the Aussie PGA at the end of December. So back-to-back starts, back-to-back wins. Wins across two calendar years for the Aussie, but approaching 40, he's clearly still got a lot left.
Yeah, he has a lot left. You look at those three co-leaders heading into the final round. Matt Kuchar was kind of doing it with smoke and mirrors. He made a boatload of putts and really wasn't hitting it that well. It wasn't surprised to see him back up on the final day. Rory really just badly misplayed a shot on the fifth hole. He was trying to land it on the front third of the green on number five, ended up flying to the pin, and he was just absolutely dead. I think the surprise there was that he didn't just take his medicine and make bogey and move on with it. He kind of compounded his error, and from that point, he wasn't able to recover. And Adam Scott, when you look what he was able to do in the final round, that was one of the grittier performances, I think, that we've seen from him. And he kind of showed off his complete skill set that he has now. He's always been an incredible driver of the golf ball. He's always been great with his irons. But over the past year and a half, 2 years, he's really taken his short game to another level. And I think that's what you saw. I mean, especially the flop shot that he hit on 15, a kind of do-or-die moment where he absolutely had to get that ball up and down to salvage a bogey. He was able to do it. And so, you know, his putting isn't pretty. It's never going to be pretty. But it's good enough now where he's top 30 on the PGA Tour in putting, so where he can really take advantage of his ball striking. He's number seven in the world now. He can continue to be a force for I think, next 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, it's still jarring to see him lining up with the long putter, putting to a flag with this pin in.
Oh, it's hideous.
And but hey, it worked. It worked very well on Sunday. He's burying birdie putts on 13 and 17, saving par on 12. And as you said, 15 was really where it seemed like it was going to get away from him, and he was able to save bogey and stay at the top. It was fascinating to see Riviera in full bloom. I mean, this is always one of the best courses on the PGA Tour, but it was firm and fast. It was playing in
ideal. There's no rough, too.
Yes, there's no rough, and it shows there doesn't necessarily need to be a ton of rough. This is a course, it's fascinating to think that there's no water hazard on the entire course. You've got the Barranca that's kind of lined with red stakes, but basically there's no water, and that is kind of what leads to a bunched up leaderboard. But at the same time, you're still able to see big numbers if you get out of position. The 10th hole gets a lot of attention, and deservedly so, but you saw on 5, Rory makes triple, Adam Scott makes double. Big numbers are lurking on this golf course, even though it's not the longest, even though there isn't a pond looming in front of every green.
Yeah, and people are trying to use this tournament and this golf course and these conditions kind of the antidote to the Distance Insights report, you know, saying all you got to do is make a golf course firm and fast. You know, it doesn't need to be 8,000 yards. Well, the problem is this is an outdoor sport, and it's difficult to replicate those conditions week in and week out. I totally agree. It was 7,200 yards. The greens aren't huge. You know, it was set up for only one player to be double digits under par. But it's just hard to do week in and week out. I think the beauty of Riviera is the strategy that you don't need 4-inch rough to be able to force players to make decisions and absolutely penalize them if they miss their spots.
So we need to turn our attention to Tiger Woods, tournament host, who seemed like he was basically a world beater through the first nine holes on Thursday. He goes out in 31, looking like a player in full control on a course that has so often had his number. And then if you look at that guy and you look at the guy that we saw on the weekend, they might as well have been separated by 4 years, let alone 4 days. I mean, he looked nothing like he did on Thursday. It seemed from his comments, from his body language, that the toll of hosting the event and playing in the event may have been more significant than he expected. He ends up dead last among the 68 guys that made the cut and then decides, surprisingly, not to play the event this week in Mexico. So take whichever piece of that you want first, but there's a lot to digest with Tiger.
Yeah, there certainly is. And I was really quite surprised. I saw him on Tuesday. He looked to be in great spirits. In hindsight, the fact that he didn't practice, I think, was a little bit alarming on Tuesday. Wednesday, during the pro-am, he looked terrific. Now, he still wasn't making any putts, but that was kind of to be expected. It's not like he was grinding over 15-footers in the pro-am round.
It wasn't just the putter that went wrong over the weekend, though.
Right.
It was the full bag issue.
But like, he was hitting it so well in the pro-am, I said, boy, I think he's really going to play well this week. And you saw on the front nine just how well he played. I think Friday morning was kind of the turning point for Tiger. He kind of leaked oil at the end of the first round, and then when he's warming up on Friday morning, it was in the 40s. He wasn't moving all that well, and he just didn't really have it on Friday. And it comes out, that he was feeling stiff, and he kind of threw in the excuse that he had been practicing. Well, was he not practicing because he grinded too hard the previous week trying to get ready for this tournament? Was he not practicing because he had so many responsibilities, even though that wasn't a new thing for him? He's been hosting tournaments for two decades. I think you can really just chalk it up to the fact that he wasn't feeling his best. He's going to have weeks like this. That's going to happen when you have a fixed, point in your spine. But from Wednesday when I saw him, I never would have predicted that he would have finished last among those to make the cut. But I think it just does show, that at his age, he's going to have these really terrible weeks.
Yeah, I mean, certainly on one level, it doesn't quite add up when you think about the fact that he hosted the Hero World Challenge 2 months ago without issue. He pulled double duty at the President's Cup and was splendid across the board.
Now he didn't play that Saturday at the President's Cup, and he said at Torrey Pines,
It took a lot out of me.
I didn't touch my clubs for 3 weeks.
But at the same time, he was able to do it in the moment. So this, as you said, is not the first time, even at this event, that he has hosted.
Third time he's done it.
Right. It seemed only now to be adding up. And as you said, maybe now it's the toll weighs more heavily than it did even 1 year or 2 years ago when it comes to that stuff. But it was still a little bit jarring to hear him honestly speak that candidly about what was going on with him physically and on and off the course.
Now, that was only after, on the weekend, he was candid.
Right.
He still, up until Friday afternoon, did not commit to playing in Mexico. It was only on Saturday where he said that he was stiff and that he wasn't going to be able to prepare.
He said on Thursday and Friday that the hosting took away from his practice and things like that. So he was at least alluding to the fact.
He made no mention of the back.
Right.
Which, that's Tiger's prerogative, and that's what he's done forever, which is fine. I think big picture, because coming out of Torrey Pines, I thought Tiger looked great. I even wrote a story on golfshow.com listing the number of reasons why there should be optimism. I think you can throw out the result to some extent, especially the performance on the greens. I mean, losing 8 strokes to the field on the greens was absolutely dreadful. But I do think big picture, it did show, and he's never putted Kikuyu Poana greens well. However, he's only getting worse on the greens. Like, historically, those last two seasons were his worst ever on the PGA Tour. Obviously, this result's going to skew poorly for his ranking as well. I think that's just something to keep an eye on, because if he isn't sharp with the driver, which he had average success at Riviera off the tee. If he's not great with the driver, which he was at Torrey Pines, and if he's not great with his irons, which he was not at Riviera, he's going to struggle. I mean, he needs to be in the fairway, and he needs to be exemplary with his irons, which over the course of his career he has been. But I think we're looking at more average putting weeks than we are looking at red-hot putting weeks and him being a top 20 putter on the PGA Tour. I just think that's something to keep an eye on as we move forward in the year. His ball striking has to be terrific for him to win.
So let's get a crystal ball here, because now the West Coast swing is over. We've got the WGC in Mexico this week. The tour heads to Florida next week with the Honda, and from there it's downhill to Augusta. So now the schedule and where guys play all seem to be pointing down Magnolia Lane and what you want to have ready in different respects for the Masters. What do you make of, and how important is it that Tiger is skipping Mexico, where he played last year? He went from Riv to Mexico, tied for 10th in Mexico City. Now, granted, he had a neck strain that then knocked him out of Bay Hill. Now it seems like he's likely to skip Mexico, maybe add Bay Hill. We're not really sure at this point. But what did you make of him going throughout the week saying, I haven't really thought about Mexico, even though it's next week, and then ultimately just letting that commitment deadline pass without entering?
You know, if Tiger feels that that's not the best for his preparation, then, you know, who are we one to criticize? To be honest, it seemed like that would have been a reasonable spot for him to pick up number 83. I mean, it's a quirky golf course that involves a lot of strategy. He didn't need to hit driver. He played decently well last year. He had a top 10 finish. I don't know if he was, you know, a dozen shots behind Dustin Johnson, just like seemingly everyone else was. But, you know, I'd rather see him play Bay Hill Players back-to-back and give himself these next 2 weeks off than kind of go to Mexico and just go through the motions. That's how I look at it. You know, I'm curious to see, only once in 2019 did he complete tournaments in back-to-back weeks, which is what he would have to do for Bay Hill and then the Players Championship. To me, the one that I'm curious to see is, does he play match play again?
That's interesting,
because that golf course doesn't really help you in terms of Masters prep. It could eventually lead to a long week if he continues to play well and makes it into the weekend as he did last year. To me, I think he can get most of his work done Bay Hill Players Week and then kind of reassess.
And potentially take a month off before the Masters?
Take 3 weeks off, yeah.
Interesting. I feel like him not playing Mexico makes it more likely that he would want to play match play. It's right in that sweet spot of 2 weeks before the Masters.
The timing is great. But if he's gassed after playing 2 weeks in a row during the Florida swing, that I could potentially see him sitting that one out. It wouldn't be ideal, but if that's what his body's telling him after 2 weeks, then...
Worth noting that Tiger is not the only guy not playing Mexico.
Five of the top 13.
Yeah, no Koepka, no Rose, no Cantlay, no Ricky Fowler, no Jason Day. No Tony Finau, who was a late WD. But are you at all surprised to see this much schedule selectivity when you've got an event? Hey, free money, free world ranking points. It's an Olympic year. There's a lot of guys jostling, especially on the American side, of jostling for that top four spot to make it to the Olympics in Tokyo. Are you surprised that this many high-profile guys opted out?
Kind of, but also not really in terms of, well, how is that for offense straddling? Most of those guys who are not playing traditionally have played that golf course terribly. And so they would rather pick up an extra start in Florida. That's what they decided to do. So that wasn't too surprising. Patrick Cantlay's having septum surgery this week. He said it was the only time during the year that he could get taken care of. He wants to be ready for the Players and the Masters, obviously. So this was the week for that. But, I mean, Brooks has been terrible there. He doesn't have a top 30 finish. Which in a limited field start is terrible, and he's playing next week at his hometown event at Honda. However, it does bring up an interesting point with this Premier Golf League, in the sense that the Premier Golf League is essentially offering WGC tournaments 10 to 18 times a year, whatever they eventually decide for the schedule. That is offering guaranteed money of a huge purse, world ranking points,
limited field,
like it's the exact same thing. And so if you can't get guys to sign up for what is a WGC this week, why in 2 to 3 years would they all of a sudden want to do 10 to 18 of these in a year? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. That absolutely shoots down the PGL model and what they're aiming for.
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly going to have to see. I agree with you that it is basically, and this is, you know, a lot of this discussion around the PGL is very reminiscent of the discussion that happened in the mid-90s that then led directly or otherwise to the birth of the WGC events in 1999. And you're right. I mean, it's tough when you come to the spring schedule. And right now, man, you are cramming a lot of big events into a very short window, and it's hard to ask these guys to play everything. That you're going to have some that skip Mexico and play match play, some that play Mexico and skip match play, some that, you know, you got guys like Spieth and Patrick Cantlay, as you said, who almost take the entire Florida swing off. Other guys have been light in on the West Coast and they heat up in Florida. Listen, this is a bunch of independent contractors, and this is where that element shines the most, is that they're able to play and pick their own schedule. And this is where in the spring leading up to the Masters, you see the most variant opinions, because everyone thinks that they have the secret sauce. Everyone thinks that they know what is best leading into the year's first major. Some are going to be right and some are going to be wrong.
Yeah, and I think, look, it makes sense in terms of keeping it on the West Coast with Mexico. I think if the tour wanted closer to full participation, they'd be wise to maybe not bring it back to Trump Doral, but have it somewhere in Florida just to kick off the Florida swing, because I think we're only going to see more players skip this. The golf course just doesn't do a lot for a lot of players.
Yeah. Any other takeaways from Riviera from your first trip out to LA and clearly a big week for a lot of guys? That anything else that stick out to you?
I think the way that Bryson played. He continues to show signs that
he might actually figure this out, right?
That like he's validating what he's been trying to do with just hammered all over the lot. I mean, he was top five in strokes gained off the tee for the second consecutive tournament that he's played. You know, what made Bryson Bryson is his iron play. You know, yes, yeah. He's always been somewhat in play off the tee, and he's never going to be a great putter. But when he was at his best in 2018, when he won four times worldwide, He was a terrific iron player, and he's just not, maybe he hasn't devoted enough time there because he's trying to tinker with his driver. But I think that's when he can take the next step to being a world-class player again and winning multiple times a year, is when he can see an uptick in his iron play. But I certainly think he's on the right track, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if he gets a win in the next couple of months after we kind of dogged him for a while here.
That's true, but he does seem to be trending in the right direction, and that's not the first time that we've seen Bryson kind of fly straight into the sun and come out unscathed. A lot of big names near the top of the leaderboard, but several big names, as you would expect in a star-studded field, made an early exit. Bubba Watson had time to play Saturday golf with Justin Bieber after winning this event three times, but then you've got JT, who seemed out of sorts from the first shot.
He was not in a good place.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on with Justin. He seemed fine. I was out of Phoenix a couple weeks ago when he finished third. Everything seemed fine, and then all of a sudden, it was not his week. And then you've got Phil, who just didn't really have it, and that's not entirely surprising given the hit-or-miss nature of his game right now. He said he wasn't going to play Mexico, didn't qualify anyway, but did either of those kind of stick out to you as especially head-scratching?
Justin Thomas, for sure. I mean, I wrote a blog post on, I think it was Wednesday of tournament week, because he was paired with Tiger, obviously. And, you know, I think the headline was like, Justin Thomas reveals secret to success playing in head-to-head with Tiger.
He was 10-1-3?
He was 10-1-3 when paired together, and he just didn't have it. I mean, he was errant off the tee. He had the two-way miss going. He wasn't sharp at all. His distance control, you know, I think Riviera's greens kind of befuddle most players, but they were really giving him a hard time. And once he started playing poorly, he has a hard time working himself out of it. He kind of just grinds himself into a hole, and paired with Tiger, who is going along swimmingly at that point, just kind of added to it. So for him to shoot, I think, 74 in the first round just was not good at all and was a surprise. It doesn't change my opinion that I think he's going to be PGA Tour Player of the Year in 2020. But
noted. We're going to put that in the archive.
Oh, you could check back in September with our predictions. But to me, that was the biggest head-scratcher. I think Phil was just kind of running out of gas, and he desperately needed a week off.
Yeah, 5 weeks in a row, and now that top 60 cutoff as we get into the spring is going to be interesting to see with him and potentially playing the U.S. Open, because he's already said he doesn't want the special invite, even if he gets it. All right, well, let's turn our attention to Mexico City this week, as we get a few big names that are skipping, but still plenty of guys that are worth talking about that are going to make the trip down there. As you said, this is a quirky course. It's at 7,500 feet elevation. This is, as our colleague Rex Hoggard said, this is the week the track man shines. This is when everyone needs to be Bryson. Everyone needs to have their numbers guy standing right behind them, because the 8-iron might fly a buck 70, it might fly a buck 85. You need to know exactly how far it's going to go. With no Phil, Dustin Johnson is the only guy in the field that has won at this course. He's defending champ, also won in 2017, clearly likes what this course has to offer. But what are your thoughts leading into the first WGC of the year?
Boy, you hate to say it, but you kind of like Dustin's chances again. Sure. Again this week. He's been doing everything in 2020 except win. He, you know, he kind of knocked off the rest of Kapalua, looked good. He almost won in Saudi Arabia. Last week, he had a chance. He was one shot off the lead for most of the final round before kind of falling away at the end. You know, for a guy who practices on the range every single day with a track man trying to dial in his distance, this is actually the tournament where he might shine the best. Because
didn't last week he say he made an equipment change because the ball was going too far?
Did he say
yeah,
that?
Yeah, he's like, I had to dial things back. It was going too far. I needed to be able to have a little better control over his clubs, which is a very Dustin Johnson problem to have.
Yeah, we've also got Mike Davis on line one if he wants to have another interview. But you know, his driver is once again a weapon. You know, he was, I think probably because of his knee, he was a little bit more errant in the back half of 2019. He seems to have that dialed in once again. And John Rahm, you know, Rory had a chance to make a statement victory last week at Riviera in terms of cementing his status as number one, and now John Rahm has a chance to take it over again after we were busy fetting Rory for 7 days. He has a chance to give it up. So as usual, it's those three players and everybody else. But I think it should be a good week. I think we're kind of due for a weird winner.
Yeah.
At this golf course.
Three for three with marquee winners. You've got two DJs and a Phil, and you've had even the guys around them. I mean, Rory finished second last year. Justin Thomas was second.
Rory blown off the map last year by Dustin Johnson.
Yeah, but everyone got blown off the map last year. JT with the hole out on the 72nd hole the year before in the playoff loss to Phil. You've had Tommy Fleetwood finish second. So it has been a pretty star-studded leaderboard at the top at this event, albeit a small sample size of 3 years. And the WGC fields by default are pretty loaded.
Yeah.
You don't have a lot of random guys getting in for the 72-man field. But, it could be interesting. You've got some other names that are a little bit further down that you might not expect. I remember, you know, a few years ago when Shane Lowry won at Bridgestone before he was Shane Lowry, the Open champion, that one kind of got caught people by surprise. Might be having a curveball this week.
Yeah. To me, John Rahm's history of playing, recent history of playing well, you know, he finished T17 last week after a kind of a mediocre final round, even though everyone had a mediocre final round at Riviera. And plus his course history, this, it feels like it could be finally John Rahm's time to take over that number one spot. What does Rory have to finish outside the top three with a Rahm win?
It's something like that. I mean, Rahm definitely needs to win to be able to get things going.
Yeah, all scenarios lead through a win, but you know, it could be that. I actually like Colin Morikawa, who just got into the field, top 50. I feel like he could play well this week. You know, all the newcomers are slightly at a disadvantage just because they haven't experienced playing at 7,500 feet above sea level. But look, it's WGCs are what they are. Yes, we're missing five of the top 13, but still, anytime you can get the best players in the world going head-to-head, it certainly must see TV.
The official scenario for John Rahm, he's got to win this week. Rory has to finish worse than a two-way tie for third. So that's definitely in the ballpark. I mean, again, assuming that Rahm wins, which is a big ask, but he has been
and
playing
and assuming
well.
Rory finishes outside the top three, which he hasn't done all that often.
Right, that's not necessarily a slam dunk, but I think it's one to watch, and Rahm is the guy that could overtake him, even though Brooks Koepka is at two. Brooks is taking the week off, and he'll resume next week in Florida, but it should be interesting watch. All right, so before we go, your first week out of Riviera, week out in L.A., what was the best thing you ate?
Best thing I ate, Koji short rib tacos.
Okay.
So I have this hobby of finding places that were on Best Thing I Ever Ate, which is a show on Cooking Channel.
Not a sponsor of the show.
No. Thanks. So I knocked off Zanku Chicken. Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know. It's your list.
I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but it was terrific. It was like a rotisserie chicken with a little garlic sauce dipping. Exquisite. The next night, had the Koji short rib tacos from a place I can't pronounce. And on Saturday night, went to Father's Office. It was Father's Office for their burger and beer, which is what everyone orders. So I would highly recommend that to anyone who's going to the Pacific Palisades area, because those three meals in particular were...
Boy, we did not discuss this before, and I knew that you were not going to let me down with a fine review of the culinary delights in the Los Angeles greater area.
check back soon for, let's see, Bay Hill updates, Jacksonville.
Honda next week. Neither of us have covered the Mexico event, which I think it's a very short list of PGA Tour events that you and I have not
had
Rex, a chance
and
to
Rex play. Said the food there is terrific.
Yes.
So maybe we can get Rex on the pod next week and he can regale us with yes. stories of his fine culinary
but
experiences.
Soon the PGA Tour is coming our way, coming to Florida. We'll have plenty to discuss.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Ryan Lavner, thanks again for joining on this latest edition and episode of the Golf Central Podcast presented by TaylorMade. I'm your host, Will Gray. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next week.